many of these countries found China less than an entirely reliable trading partner.
China and the EU are apparently experiencing trade troubles. This is Wednesday, September 16th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, the COVID-19 pandemic made life very difficult for a VOA Asia intern. One of the hardest hit medical treatments hampered by the pandemic is going to the dentist. And you'll hear why fewer restaurants mean fewer performance jobs in New York City. It is all on today's VOA Asia. Europe has called on China to take down trade barriers and rebalance the economic relationship following a virtual summit held Monday between EU leaders and Chinese President Xi Jinping. EU officials also raised human rights issues, including the crackdown on protests in Hong Kong. But Beijing is rejecting any interference in its affairs. Henry Ridgewell has more from London.
The glitz of an international summit downgraded to a virtual conference. EU and Chinese leaders had planned to hold face-to-face talks in Germany, but the resurgent coronavirus pandemic meant that was changed to a video link between two top EU officials, German Chancellor Angela Merkel and the Chinese President Xi Jinping. Speaking after the meeting, European leaders reiterated demands for China to open up its markets.
Europe needs to be a player, not a playing field. Today's meeting represents another step forward in forging a more balanced relationship with China.
We expect that the market access barriers in China will be removed.
Europe sees its current trade relationship with China as deeply unfair, but is not seeking a trade war, says analyst Steve Tsang.
I think COVID-19 has changed a lot of things in terms of relationship with China. Many of these countries found China less than an entirely reliable trading partner or supplier of essential goods like medical supplies. So some of that will change, but they really don't want to have an economic decoupling with China.
But the trade talks were overshadowed by growing criticism of China's human rights record. The EU has called on Beijing to end its clampdown on pro-democracy protests in Hong Kong. And Europe has voiced growing alarm over China's treatment of the Muslim Uyghur population in Xinjiang province, where human rights groups say millions of people are being detained. While China denies the accusations, German Chancellor Angela Merkel says Europe will continue to raise the issue.
The human rights dialogue will continue. Chinese President Xi Jinping offered this, so there are already points of contact for further joint action. But that does not mean that there is agreement on these issues.
Chinese state media reports that President Xi Jinping has rejected any interference in Chinese affairs, particularly on human rights. The relationship is strained, says Tsang.
Governments generally and the EU as a whole also take a more robust stance, reflecting the shift in public opinion towards China.
With the EU as China's top trading partner, analysts say Beijing wants to avoid further disputes amid its trade war with the United States. For its part, Brussels says it will continue to bring up security and human rights concerns, even as it seeks more trade. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
You're listening to VOA Asia. We have documented the many challenges facing both students and parents deciding whether or not to send those students back to school as the COVID-19 pandemic continues. One of our interns at VOA Asia has faced an even more trying experience. Ji-hee Wu came to us in Washington, D.C. from South Korea. I spoke with her about her experiences. You have one of the most unusual internships of anyone we've ever had at the Voice of America. What happened?
This year was pretty tough for the whole world. And for as an intern from abroad, it was also a very tough time, I would say. So usually what we expect when I am in the United States and doing an intern would be like experiencing the workplace and getting a chance to get along with you know, like other people. And that's what I've expected. But since the pandemic started, I couldn't go to work, and I wasn't even sure that I could go to work, because actually my government was pressing me to go back to South Korea, and I was the one actually signed up the waiver and said that I'm not going to go back. I kind of refused.
What was the waiver?
So the waiver was this. So like for the program, they were kind of pushing everyone who was attending this program to go back to South Korea, because they were not going to guarantee our health when we get coronavirus. So the waiver was about, okay, I had to sign and say that, okay, the government is not going to take any kind of responsibility when I get sick or when I get the virus, and I'm the one who have to cope with everything, and they're just like kind of giving us up.
Was that difficult? Was that difficult to make up your mind on that?
Yeah, definitely. Because first of all, my family would definitely want to want me to come back, and also when I'm thinking logically, I should have gone back, but I just couldn't do it, because I've dreamed of like coming to here and start my internship, and it just felt so wrong that I felt like I'm forgiving so many, I mean giving up so many things if I go back. And I thought like I will lose in this circumstance if I just go back, and if I don't face this problem, then I am going to be a loser or something.
Well, what we haven't brought up yet is the pandemic and the COVID-19. You got it. How'd you get it? What did it feel like? What did it do to you?
This virus, you don't know where you get it. You just don't know. I am not sure even where I got it.
How bad was it, and what did you do to take care of it?
I felt fatigue. When I was starting working, I was like, oh my God, I'm so tired. I didn't know why, but I was very, very tired. The next day, actually, I started to have some runny nose and headaches. So I was like 100% sure I got the virus. So I did my quarantine since then. And I went up to the testing site. And I got they told me that I got the virus, and that was the day I started to feel some shortness of breath and also lots of chest pains.
So how did you take care of it? Did you just ride it out? Did you see a doctor? What happened?
I couldn't go to the hospital. I knew that they cannot do anything for me because there is no treatment for coronavirus. Fortunately, I did not have fever, and I did have my medicine kit in my house. So I didn't go to the doctor. What I did was eat lots of vitamin C, lots and lots of vitamin C. So like I would have a good immune system, so my body can fight with the virus. So yeah, I ate lots of orange, vitamin C, and I tried to eat well, but because I didn't taste anything.
So you're free of it now, right?
Yeah, done with coronavirus right now.
Jihee has completed her internship with us and is now making her way back home to South Korea. We continue on VOA Asia. The World Health Organization is releasing guidance to minimize the risk of being infected with COVID-19. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
As everyone in the world can attest, having a toothache is no fun. And when the pain is bad enough, people will go to the dentist. However, a World Health Organization survey of 103 countries between May and mid-July finds COVID-19 has affected dental services around the world in unprecedented ways. Dental officer in WHO's Department of Non-Communicable Diseases, Benoit Varenne, says 75% of survey respondents reported dental services have been completely or partially disrupted because of the coronavirus. He says the high level of disruption is linked to the nature of the work provided by the oral healthcare personnel.
as you know, dentists, dental nurses, hygienists, and dental assistants work in close contact with patients and are exposed to saliva and blood. And also they are using what we call spray-generating equipment. And all this equipment are generating what we call airborne particles or aerosol.
In communities where transmission of the coronavirus is high, Varenne says WHO recommends priority be given to urgent or emergency oral cases. And in the treatment of patients, he says dental workers should avoid or minimize procedures that may generate aerosols, which can spread the infection, and prioritize the use of hand instruments.
And of course, to delay routine, non-essential oral health care. This means oral health checkup, dental cleaning, preventive care, and certainly also some aesthetic dental treatment.
Other WHO recommendations include remote screening, maintaining physical distancing, and wearing masks before and in between dental sessions to prevent and reduce the risk of transmission. Varenne says one of the most pressing issues is to ensure all dental workers have personal protective equipment. This is essential, he says, to protect themselves from becoming infected with COVID-19 and passing it on to their patients.
You're listening to VOA Asia. New York City has always attracted creative people, those who are happy to wait tables in the evening as long as it pays the bills, only to run to auditions and have time for their art during the day. However, the coronavirus pandemic has forced over 1,000 Big Apple restaurants to close, and that means no jobs for the New York City bohemia. Anna Nelson looked into how the New York art scene has been adapting to the new reality. Anna Rice narrates her story.
Among the tens of thousands of New York City waiters, many are aspiring artists or actors looking for a day job that'll pay the bills. They're following in the famous footsteps of artists like Sandra Bullock and Jennifer Aniston, and singers like Madonna and Mariah Carey. But over 1,000 New York City restaurants were forced to close because of COVID-19, and tens of thousands of jobs disappeared. Jen Lyon is a concert promoter. She says she has noticed fewer talented musicians available for work since COVID. Many have left New York City for good because restaurants and nightclubs are closed and can't accommodate them.
The Lady Gaga story. If Lady Gaga didn't play in small clubs in New York, we wouldn't have a Lady Gaga. Aren't we glad we have her? Bruce Springsteen. You know, I mean, all of these artists that make the stories and soundtracks of our lives. All of those artists who were working within the restaurant industry to maintain living in New York, to become artists, have now had to make different life choices and have had to leave New York.
Before the pandemic, one could spend an hour in line at restaurant Stardust on Broadway. Once inside the venue, waiters sang to entertain the customers.
You sing with all the voices of the mountain.
Today, Kevin Ray and Yulia Proshina, both former Stardust employees, are fundraising to support their fellow singer waiters.
It's about 200 or 200 plus people. Everybody is trying to find their own path right now. Some of them are creating their own music or something else. Some people are probably going in a totally different direction away from the music, which is kind of sad. We had a lot of talented people here.
The flexible work schedule allowed Kevin Ray to compose music and go on tours. Today, with future uncertain, he writes songs about 6 feet, the now notorious social distance.
6 feet away from you. You know, it's everybody's livelihood. It's allowed us to live in this city. It's allowed us an opportunity to perform, to hone our craft, and to have fun while doing it.
Artist Rachel Berry has lived in New York for 15 years and worked many different jobs, but only bartending left her enough time and energy to focus on art.
The flexibility that comes with part-time work for full-time pay has essentially given me the creative freedom to do anything else I want on the side. I mean, you can't be creative, you can't perform, you can't write when you're your basic needs are in jeopardy.
For Anna Nelson in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Thank you for being with us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Ira Melman in Washington.